Naomi Ness Creek currently lives in Regina, Saskatchewan. She has an interest in social activism. She has had an interest in social activism most of her life. From as early as high school, she spent much of her free time organizing petitions and letter-writing campaigns. Her family suffered a missing person loss, and she spent a number of years searching. Projects she has been involved with over the years range from being the first person living year-round at the Crake Sustainable Living Project to organizing a library for the Interchurch Uranium Committee Educational Cooperative, Uranium and Nuclear Issues Educator for Greenpeace Western Canada, starting numerous domestic community garden and community composting projects, and generally trying to help those who need help anywhere possible. She really believes that small groups of people can make an incredible difference. Thank you for coming, Naomi, and welcome.
I'm a little shorter than Mr. Quackenbush, so I'll just bring that down. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and speak to everyone here today. I do know Kimberly, who was going to bring one of our new Kurdish and Syrian neighbors. You guys might not know this, but this church is actually one building over from where a number of our families live. I'm actually right next door here all the time. Back in November, as many of you probably remember, there was a bombing in Paris, and all of a sudden in the media and on social media, in the news, it just exploded with people suddenly saying, I don't want to see the Syrian refugees coming to Canada or the United States, or just insert whatever country you have there. The entire world just suddenly decided that that wasn't a good idea. And, you know, that just doesn't seem very Canadian to me. And I just kind of thought that people just needed a little push to remind them that Canada is all about the Arabian word marhaba. Marhaba means welcome. And that it's a much more Canadian thing to not be paranoid and worried about national security. To me, that seems like a very United States approach to thinking. Canadians are much more about going and bringing a casserole to the new person that shows up next door. And, you know, really, it's not that big a step to go from a casserole to a couple couches, a bed, and maybe a table. And so I think that a lot of Canadians have an extra couch downstairs, a whole lot more clothing than they need, and often an entire grocery store worth of dried goods sitting in a pantry somewhere. And that all it really took was someone saying, we should show up with a little bit bigger casserole and welcome people as they come to our country instead of worrying about whether or not they should be here. And then once you start getting people moving to do anything like that, it's really not that big a step to then say, if you want to help these people, hey there, let's help everybody. So 3 days into starting my group, I just kind of gave a little push. And for most of my life, that's how my family and I have been operating anyway, right? There's always a lot of things out there that people are throwing out. This drives me crazy. I run a free coffee program for seniors through my work through the city, and I can't even handle seeing the coffee grounds thrown out. So just so you know right now, if you don't currently compost the coffee grounds downstairs, I will have to gather them up this morning because it just drives me crazy if I see them thrown out. Awesome. Okay, you rock. That is really good. But I really believe that there is just way too many things thrown out that people can use. and that it's a wonderful gesture of welcome to greet people who may have less than ourselves with a small gift of something that we may not necessarily be using. And it's more about that gesture of welcome. But sometimes carrying heavy objects like couches isn't our forte. And this guy here beat me to the punch. I looked around this room this morning, and one of the biggest things now that people have settled into their homes that is the biggest need we have is English tutors. And if anyone else felt compelled to follow the example of this fine gentleman here, I am in and out of not only Syrian homes, but other refugee homes almost every day. And the thing that everyone says is, bring more friends. Bring people to visit me. I just want to have coffee and speak English. Please, Naomi, I need to learn English. I need to learn English. I know the waiting list is short right now. You're telling me 3 months is short. But I don't want to wait 3 days. Please let me practice English. So that is a huge, huge need and something that anyone could do. It's something that can literally change lives and help people to feel that they really are settling in Canada and that this is a home and not just somewhere that they have ended up because of war. Learning to speak and feel like they have new friends is probably the biggest service that we can do to new Canadians. I actually started the concept of what I'm doing right now. My current group is called I Will Help Regina. And I am a techie kind of girl. I run it out of my phone. It's on Facebook, which may not be everyone's thing. But 20 years ago, I was doing the same thing, only then I called it stuff. And computers were just kind of becoming a big thing. People actually had home computers, but they were about the size of this podium. And we created what we called the Let's Cooperative, the Local Exchange Trading System, which many of you have probably heard of. I helped start that up in Saskatchewan. I was member number 4, and we had it going between Saskatoon and Regina. It's still going to some degree. And I would actually dumpster dive, because back then businesses didn't lock their dumpsters, and I would find usable things, and I would also gather up from community garage sales or wherever people were getting rid of things. And sort of like I'm doing now, I had a school bus that I lived in, and I would fill it to the brim of needed items and distribute it to anyone who seemed like they needed it. I did all of this before my little brother went missing. April the 3rd, when Jim asked me to speak today, April the 3rd is typically a day that I kind of go off the rails. And the couple weeks preceding April the 3rd tend to be my least functional time of the year. I began community service as a young person. My family are also immigrants. One side of my family is from Scotland, the other side from England. I was not born in this country myself. And we settled in northern Saskatchewan. My grandfather had an English lit degree and was a university professor. He was the director of education for northern Saskatchewan. And he started libraries on Native reservations all over Saskatchewan. He had a heart attack in his 30s. And as the oldest daughter, my mother sent me to live with my grandparents. And I went around and helped set up libraries in some of the poorest communities in this province. My brother Matthew was born without being able to hear. We looked so alike that my grandmother used to dress us in matching outfits. He would wear like blue and white, and I would wear red and white. And I, to this day, I think we were pretty cute. She would we had the same hair. She would put a bowl on top of our head and cut our hair exactly the same. And I spoke for him for most of his life. He did eventually regain the ability to hear, but because of the delayed reaction learning to talk, it sort of affected him his entire life. And in April the 3rd of 1993, you may or may not remember the Starlight Tours that were happening in Saskatoon. This was a practice where typically young men, mainly First Nations, but some other young men, in my brother's case, he was a social activist, protesting at Cameco every day. These young men were taken to the outskirts of Saskatoon and left without shoes to walk back in winter. And in my brother's case, I was hopeful that that was not what had happened to him. It was not known that widely at that time that that was going on. And a van had gone through Saskatoon that same day, and a number of other young men had gone missing and were taken out to the West Coast. So his body wasn't found right away, and I spent 10 years looking for him until it was. Now, when major tragedies happen in your life, you can either decide to give up, or you can end up someone who becomes a little obsessive compulsive about everything you do. In my case, just the same as when Granddad decided that despite a heart attack, he was going to start a library everywhere he went. I decided everywhere I went that I would start things. Not small things. Always crazy, epic, huge things. And I always had this idea that if I just believed hard enough, it would happen. And that's what it was like when Matt disappeared. I just kind of thought that if I searched hard enough, he'd show back up. But I've always kind of also had it in my head that if he was alive, I would want to know that any single person who saw him, even if it was a very small kindness, because of his hearing loss at a young age, he did sometimes often appear a little different than many people. He would often seem confused or difficult to approach because he wouldn't look you right in the face. He wasn't a particularly pleasant person to approach all the time. But to me, he was the sun. And I guess that when I see people who have mental issues and are out there looking for change, and I give, like, yesterday I gave a guy like $275, and it was all the change I had in my pocket. And he got seriously cranky with me. And he was like, "That's not enough to buy coffee." And some people would think, "That's really ungrateful of you." I started bantering back and forth. I'm like, "Man, I think you can find coffee for this. If you're patient, I'm going to search my car and I might have a couple more quarters. I really don't have my purse right now, and this is all the money I can got to give you. I really think you can buy coffee for this." Now, there I had a choice. He wasn't a particularly attractive person to help. But I always hoped that somebody would respond with a smile if Matt was out there and maybe not even asking for change, but looking like he needed help. When I see Syrian refugees living in tents and cold and washing their babies outside in cold water, to me, I think when these people come to Canada, they have a sister somewhere back overseas. And I can tell you right now that even if the rest of their family is living in a tent, all they want to know is that their lost family who has now ended up in a cold country that they don't even know what it's like. What the heck is snow? Where have we sent these people? I think it's where Santa Claus comes from. It's, we're not really even sure who Santa Claus is. They want to know that somebody is adopting their family and looking after them. When my brother was a missing person for 10 years, and after 10 years, you never stop hoping, even after DNA tests prove it. All I wanted that entire time was to think that if I never see him again, wherever he's ended up, maybe some strange country where there is no snow, that somebody is taking him in and loving him. Be that helping him to learn whatever language he needs, or bringing him the extra broken cup from their cupboard because he doesn't have a cup. And that's what we need to do for absolutely everyone we meet. Right now, because I've created this amazing network of angelic human beings who just keep emptying their closets and their cupboards, and I don't know, I think sometimes they're just walking over when they see people who are about to run to the dump with furniture and knocking on their door. Like, some of this stuff seems miraculous, how it keeps dropping into my lap. But there's this amazing network of people helping me to go out there and help people. And we can all do that. Absolutely everywhere we go, absolutely every single day, we have a choice to spread love in even the smallest ways. And I think that that's what the entire world needs to be about, and that's what we need more of. So I think it's really cool that you guys wanted me to come here today, because you're already all about that. And I think it's really great that you're composting, because to me, absolutely all of that is connected. My brother and I started with a desire to help others and a concern about environment and waste. And it's built to believing that saving a bit of coffee from going in the garbage can actually help somebody to settle into a new land. To me, all these things are connected, and they're all important. No matter what you're doing, as long as it's done out of love, it's going to change the world. Because everyone you meet will be inspired by that. I don't really think I'm doing that much. And all day long, people tell me, and have most of my life, that I inspire them. And I'm really not doing that much. I'm not doing anything that anybody else couldn't do. I am doing nothing special. And yet, to so many people, it's the most special thing that has ever happened in their life. So, if you're interested in joining with us, which really, you kind of are already, I am on Facebook at I Will Help Regina, and you're welcome to join. But there are also so many other things that you can do if you're interested in meeting some of the refugee families that live right here in the cathedral neighborhood. There are currently, you may not be aware of this, but 6 Syrian families with wonderful children and people who need walks to the park and entertainment, living right in this community, and 3 homes of new African families, and a variety of other people who've settled longer, but those would be our newest and sort of highest need immigrants right here in this area. And so you don't even really have to go very far to find people who are in need of company and help. But definitely the biggest need we have right now is more people to sign up for that library English learning program. It's only a couple hours a week, unless you're willing to volunteer more, in which case we certainly can help you to access people in their homes and actually just meeting for coffee. So that's a really huge drive that I'm still pushing. Thank you very much. And I look forward to speaking to anyone who has any questions. I'm not sure if we do questions here or downstairs or if we start singing now. But I'm all about more singing.
Naomi has offered to take questions. If there are any, I'll bring the microphone around, or if you have any comments or...
Well, I can go around with this mic, and Naomi can keep that mic to answer questions.
Thank you so much, Naomi. You certainly have inspired me to now thinking of all these ideas, because you know, it would be wonderful if our congregation could do some welcoming act, I think, particularly since people are so close and, you know, they wouldn't have to walk far.
Well, at least one of our ladies has repeatedly shown an interest in coming to church, that would be a great way for her to learn English, is being in the church service. So we did invite them this morning, and Kimberly waited outside for quite a while. But I'll continue to encourage everyone to... Yeah. Come here on Sunday mornings.
My idea is that perhaps the second week, and we can talk about it too, others of us, the second Sunday in May, every second Sunday we have a potluck lunch.
Ah, I love potlucks.
And so what I was thinking is that second Sunday in May, we might like to make our casseroles a bit bigger and invite, through you, a group. So it's just a thought.
You know what? That is a great idea, but you wouldn't even really, like, I don't even know if you know how obsessed Middle Eastern people are about food. I don't think you need to worry about big enough potlucks. The problem is eating all the food these ladies would bring. I am literally expanding, and I am a fitness instructor 7 days a week, and I am eating so much at every home I go to. They're all like, no, I get to feed the Yumminess Creek lunch. And I'm like, but I just ate next door. No, you have to eat some of my lunch, too. Yeah, no, that is a great idea.
Do you have a drop-off center? Like, these people need bed linens and kitchen supplies and things like that.
That is wonderful that you're offering space in the church for that, ma'am. Thank you. That is actually a real need right now.
And I just wondered if you had an address or something where we can drop things off.
What a coincidence, because that is a constant problem for me.
Oh.
I have roving and continually changing drop-off spots until the person who is currently accepting donations becomes completely overwhelmed and exhausted. It usually takes about 2 days, and then I drag it out for 3 weeks. No, right now I do not have a drop-off center, but Kimberly is certainly someone, again, she's raising her eyebrows at me, that you could ask where pretty much it changes day to day. But I certainly appreciate that the church might actually have like an outdoor bin or something. We could build a lean-to. I'm very handy at making stuff out of pallets that I find in back alleys. It could be a track. We could paint it like beautiful rainbow colors. I love this. Except you have no idea how out of control it could get.
In the last while, this congregation and me and a few others have become particularly interested in First Nations issues and stepping forward to be helpful. Has your group any kind of connection for doing that, or are they part of the overall number of people you help, or how does that work for you?
This question thing is so much better than me just talking, because I just kind of ramble when I talk. Actually, over 50% of the parcels that we send out go to First Nations and inner city homes. On my website, if you go on I Will Help Regina, all you'll see is volunteers jumping in to help refugee families because they don't speak for themselves. But First Nations people just message me directly. And one of our big focuses, we're actually hooked into all the women's shelters. And so not only are we helping to settle refugees, but all the women's shelters in town quietly let me know when the ladies are finding their permanent residences. And just like the refugees, frequently these ladies leave the shelter and they literally have a backpack. Some of them have hooked into the free bed program that's available through the government, but not all of them even have a bed. So sometimes we're finding people like a whole bed, bedding, some canned goods, some things just to start them out, because frequently they will have spent their allotment that they've got for some funds. They've spent their food allowance and everything else to pay that first month's deposit that they're also required. So especially with the ladies getting out of women's shelters, often their situation is as dire, if not more so, than the refugee homes. And literally we have furnished some of those homes. Like, I'll go in and to visit the ladies a month or two later, and all of a sudden it'll be like a total shock to me when I look around and realize every single thing in this home we brought. And it's like my brain has to do a double take, because I'll look over and realize, like, the other day I went to go visit a lady who had settled about a month ago, and she just asked me over for coffee. And I looked over and went, "We didn't get you a coffee table yet." And what made me realize this is that she'd stacked up a bunch of boxes that I also recognized as boxes that we'd sent items over in, and she'd managed to make a really innovative platform so that the two sides matched well, and a Rubbermaid bucket top. But I also recognized that the bucket had been cracked when it went in, but the top was still good, and she made it into a coffee table. And I hadn't noticed at first that that's what it was, because she'd done such a good job of draping this scarf that I had wrapped some lentils in over top to make a coffee table with. And I suddenly went, "Oh, you don't have a coffee table yet." And she went, "Well, I've got this thing." And, you know, the impact on your brain when you suddenly realize that, you know, everything else has come from us, and even the pieces that she's made this coffee table out of were cast-offs of things that we wrapped items in. Yeah. So, yes, absolutely. If that's a focus and an interest, that's a huge need, and definitely in that case, it's sometimes harder to find donations and people who are excited about doing that work, because it is invisible on my website, whereas the volunteers are popping up and talking about all the refugee homes they're in. As a safety issue, I can't necessarily have people posting on public pages even generally very much about what they're doing helping the women out of the shelter. And once we make friends and help those ladies frequently, we then discover that they have a daughter living on their own who has even less than they had. And then we discover that they have an auntie back on the reserve that needs a walker. And then what I find is that as we help one member of the community, we end up finding that they actually have other needs and family members, and we end up helping them as well. So absolutely, pretty much, what are you interested in? I can help you access it. If we were to visit the SPCA together, I am very sorry to say that you really don't want to take me to the animal shelter either. Like, you'll come home with a whole bunch of animals, and I'll promise you that I'll find other homes for them, but I will make you adopt the most unattractive animals that I think might, you know, like, you will come home with three-legged turtles and goldfish that have no fins and, like, all kinds of things like that. Blind dogs. Yeah, I'll make you bring them all home.
I just wanted to say thank you for coming at this time. Loss and pain, anniversaries of loss and pain are so hard to deal with. I think it's marvelous that you're here. Is it okay if I ask you something about Matthew?
Of course.
He wasn't your twin, but you were like twins, is that?
We were like 10 or 11 months apart.
Oh, really? Yeah. And he was gone for 10 years. Where did they find him? Do you know if he was on a Starlight tour?
Yes, he was. That year in 1993, I remember it very clearly. It was a year that the ice on the river was quite thick. He was found across from the Queen Elizabeth Power Station on a small island that normally wouldn't be accessible, but that particular year, what we think now happened, it took about 6 months for the RCMP to piece the story together from what little was left, is it appears that he was dropped off near the Queen Elizabeth Power Station, as many people are, and that because of the reflections from the power plant onto the water, that particular small island in the river is uninhabited and uninhabitable. But the way the light reflects off of it, it would have appeared that there was a home there with lights on through the trees. And so what likely happened is he was trying to get to what looked like the nearest place, but once getting across the ice, it's especially on April 3rd, it's quite likely that even one day later it was impossible to get back. So. But yeah, it kind of would have looked like a house from what we can piece together, because they did a series of tests as to how it would have worked.
Thank you, Naomi. I think inspirational. I think inspirational is a good word. It was, it came up a few times. I think that was appropriate. It's so nice to hear sort of abstract concepts that we hear all the time actually be made personal and concrete, and that's how solutions happen, I think, to problems, is connecting them with ourselves. So I think that was done wonderfully this morning, so thank you.